Welcome back to Wavecast, the official podcast of the Marine Institute of Memorial University. I'm your host, Eugenie, and today we are all taking a trip down to the Galapagos with third-year PhD student Ana Belén Janes Suarez. Belén is a deep-sea ecologist in the fisheries science program here at MI, who is currently using imagery from remotely operated vehicles to study the three-dimensional structures of deep-sea coral to see how they can support the ecosystems around them, like how they provide nursery habitats and refuges for fish. Ana Belén led the biological collection on Dr. Kathleen Robert's research cruise in the Galapagos Islands and led the cruise to La Isla de Coco in Costa Rica, supported by the Schmidt Ocean Institute and National Geographic. Welcome, Ana Belén, to the podcast.
Hi, Eugene. I'm studying deep sea ecosystems because I'm interested in the functions that different ecosystems have in deep sea. Right now, I'm studying deep sea corals, which are benthic organisms that create those amazing three-dimensional structures where several species of fish and crabs and you name it live. Mm-hmm. And without those structures, we lose a lot of important environment that is habitat, that is nursery, that is places where fish aggregate for reproduction and so on. In theory, they are protected from human impacts because there is no mining, there is no fisheries there, in the Galapagos, for example. But still, we cannot protect an ecosystem from climate change. We cannot protect them from ocean warming, and our oceans are getting warmer, they are losing breath, and they are getting acidic. And very few people is really working on that aspect for the deep ocean. But this amazing ecosystem will be affected. Some of them are already affected, and we know very little about that. So I want to focus my last chapter of my PhD that has to do with La Isla del Coco in Costa Rica and with the Galapagos Island in Ecuador. And it will be about this specific question.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a bit about this research cruise and how it came together, how long you were out there for, and just what was it like?
Yeah, sure. It's very complex. So Dr. Robert, she started a proposal several years ago in 2018, I believe, for Schmidt Ocean Institute, which is an organization.
Is it based in, where is the Schmidt Ocean Institute?
I think it's in the US.
Okay, I thought it was California. I couldn't remember.
I don't know where it's exactly based because the ocean, the vessel is traveling all around.
Okay.
And the projects are happening everywhere, but it's based somewhere in the US. So the Schmidt Ocean Institute have these research vessels, and these vessels are equipped. Right now they have the new vessel, Falkor 2. We were one of the first groups that used this amazing vessel. So they have several labs, they have the ROV room, and everything is really well thought. So you have all the commodities you need that often are very rare in deep sea and for this type of research in the ocean. So Kathleen applied for this, for using all this equipment with a project that is called Vertical Reefs a long time ago. But because of COVID, the project didn't happen on time. It was supposed to start in 2020 and 2021, where I started my PhD. And so time passed by. And then SOI and the National Geographic, they have a partnership. SOI, they have several cruises with several scientists that have applied. As I mentioned, they apply. It's very competitive, so people have to apply with years ahead. But now there is this partnership with National Geographic with the intention of, so if a local scientist, as I am, because I used to work in the Galapagos Islands, I'm from Ecuador, and I used to work in one of the first projects that did the baseline of deep sea fauna in the seamounts of the Galapagos. So I used to characterize these ecosystems and identify the organisms from already 8 years ago. And so they partnered, and that was it. That's a new, global new. And so what happened is that if you have your own idea and your own idea of a project, you can apply for National Geographic grants. National Geographic Explorer grants is a grant that is open for the world. Everyone that has a project can apply for it. And I particularly focus in a question that I had since 8 years ago when I was working back in the Galapagos, where I wanted to understand these corals, because we observe corals, although people think that corals in the Galapagos were only discovered now. That's not the case. These big coral reefs were only discovered in April previous year. But we knew that there is corals in the Galapagos. We have observed them for already for decades. But the discovery of these huge coral reefs, that was a new thing. Because we saw them scattered around the archipelago. But finding like huge coral reefs, that was a huge thing. But we knew since a long time ago the existence of these deep sea coral reefs. Corals, at least. So I was interested in understanding how the expansion of areas in the ocean where the oxygen concentration is very low and they are expanding, so oxygen minimum zone expansion, how this will affect a sessile species that cannot escape from that. In the case of fish, they will probably emigrate. Some species will adapt. But if you are a sessile coral, what are you going to do if in the place where you are living, suddenly the oxygen decreases? So I was interested in that. And for me, it was something that was in the back of my head for several years. And then there was this call and I knew about that, like probably with less than ammonia, like it happens often. So I apply with my project. I wrote a project about that idea. I presented to Kathleen and Robert, and she was like, yeah, this is really interesting. And she was happy to hear my ideas and all that. So I just submit this project, and then that was 6 months of waiting. And then I got an email from the National Geographic telling me that my project was accepted. So with that, we had an extra 25,000 to conduct my project. And so before anyway, I would have gone with Dr. Robert, because I'm the PhD student that's supposed to go, because my whole PhD is supposed to be about that. Mm-hmm. In the Eastern Tropical Pacific, we have the infamous archipelago of the Galapagos, the Galapagos Islands, don't we? And most people know about that. Biologists are obsessed with that thanks to Charles Darwin. But apart from this amazing hotspot of biodiversity that is the Galapagos archipelago, there are other islands that belong to other countries. And so the local governments, Ecuador, Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica, and recently Mexico, with their amazing protected areas, they want to join forces to protect a larger area of the Eastern Tropical Pacific through a project that is called the Marine Corridor of the Eastern Tropical Pacific. That was back a long time ago when I was studying doing my bachelor degree in 2012 back in my country, that I knew about all that. It's been for a long time working on, the people has been working on that for several years, already more than two decades. But recently in the last 4 years, the steps have been bigger and bigger. And right now, the Galapagos Islands increase its marine protected area by 60,000 square kilometers.
Wow.
And La Isla del Coco, so people know it as Cocos Island, although Cocos Island is another island in Australia, so we like to call it La Isla del Coco in Costa Rica, also increases its marine protected area. And now the two marine protected areas are touching. Why is it so relevant for marine conservation? What started all this initiative a long time ago is the foreign fisheries fleet that come around these areas and exploit all the resources around. And there is also unreported illegal fisheries around the protected areas in the Eastern Tropical Pacific. What happened? We have those amazing migratory species such as hammerheads, whale sharks, you name it. They are protected within the marine protected area, but they are not protected right outside. And those are migratory animals, they don't know limits. They don't know where the marine protected area is over. So outside of the Galapagos, there was a huge fleet that captured tons and tons of sharks illegally. And that was one of the cases, but it's a very famous case when that happened. And that also caused a lot of concern, local concern. So the governments moved faster to actually go for this initiative. So now we have this the first steps of this corridor, like actual steps. So many of these countries, Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica, Ecuador, have increased the marine protected areas. And the objective is that they all will connect at some point. And when that happens, there will not be room for these unreported fleets, mm-hmm. unreported illegal fisheries to come around mm-hmm. and take over all these resources and all these protected species and endangered species in many cases. So because of that knowledge that I had, I wanted to include other areas. So I proposed to see if we could actually go to somewhere else. Actually, I proposed all these islands, Coiba, Malpelo, La Isla del Coco, and the Galapagos, apart from the Galapagos, the Kathleen was already going. But of course, it's good to have big aspirations. So you already fall halfway. So at the end, they said that they're going to pass through La Isla del Coco and everything. But in the end, it was more about Kathleen was already very happy about the project and all that. So instead of doing that, of stopping, what happened is that by the end of the cruise with Kathleen, we went to La Isla del Coco as part of the cruise with Kathleen. Just that Kathleen didn't go because it was only about the project that I proposed. So I led that part, and Dr. Robert came back to the Marine Institute, and now we have data from the Galapagos and also from La Isla del Coco. And it's great because, that will help a lot to really the conservation of these areas.
So how long, if you were doing these cruises, mm-hmm. Were they back to back, and how long was it in total?
So we started the 18th of September in the Galapagos until the 13th of September. In the Galapagos, we went from the 18th of September to the 13th of October.
Mm-hmm. About a month.
A little bit less than a month, and then we had an extra week in La Isla del Coco. But most of the time we were moved, so it's long distance. So it was from the 13th to the 19th when the cruise ended in Costa Rica.
And my other question for you is, how did it feel, because you're from Ecuador,
mm-hmm.
how did it feel to be back in your home country and be studying there again, like after being away in Canada for 3 years?
It feels great. I mean, I have been away from my country working abroad for 7 years. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I did my master's degree in ecology back in Ghent University in Belgium. And then I stayed working there, and I did research at Bremen University, also in coral, but in this case in shallow water corals. I was interested in understanding how the combined effect of warming and ocean eutrophication affect corals. So we were studying corals from the Red Sea. And then before I finished my master, I applied for this program, but because of COVID, I was away for 6 months or so. So going back after like 7 years to my country to work and feel in the field, it was great. Like, I feel like at home. There's still few of my colleagues working in the Charles Darwin Research Station, so I could meet with them, see how much they have grown, and you know, the vibes were amazing. The idea of this trip was just to collect what we needed, but also look at the species that we haven't collected before,
mm-hmm.
which was great because I had a little 200 pages ID guide that I created with the real images. And so I knew which species we didn't collect, and we didn't know really what they were. So we print those
ID guides.
Yeah, we print those pages of the images of the species that we didn't know, and they were kind of the most wanted. So people mm-hmm. will know, okay, this is the most wanted, because we will be doing working shifts. So some people will be working at night, some people during the day. And so whoever was in the aerobic room, they will have those pages, and they were like, okay, this one's still there. We have one of the most wanted. So it was quite fun in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of...
Did you catch any species? Did you manage to catch most of your most wanted species? I guess it's collect.
No. We collect them all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Amazing.
That must have been surprising then.
Yeah.
And was it then like you collected one sample of one specimen, or was it like any time that you see an image, you go and collect that same specimen? Or was there, did you think, okay, we got it once, we'll get the next one?
Oh, no, just once. Like, yeah. So the idea was to collect species that look very different. So in case we cannot identify them from the image, because I'm doing the image analysis, mm-hmm. annotating the videos. But then the genetical part will help to complement that. So if we don't know what this species is, then we'll go to the genetical part. But it was not necessary to collect, like if we see a specific black coral and then we see 100 of them, we will just collect one and then we will know, okay, we have this and we know what it is and then we know what the others might be. We will not be sure 100%, but at least anyway, there was no chance we could collect all the corals.
Yeah. Well, just like a little snapshot. Yeah. Is there something else that you saw? Corals unrelated. Did you see something really cool that you thought, oh, okay, I'll remember that one for a while? Did you see like a...
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Can you talk a little bit about what you saw?
Yeah, I wanted to show you a picture, actually. I got completely out of my mind. So it was wonderful. It was a coral.
That's okay. That's what you love. That's okay.
But this was a huge, huge black coral. Was something that we didn't see before in the Galapagos. Actually, one of my colleagues that also worked in the Galapagos data set, he didn't know what it was because she never saw that there. You see this coral? We were passing by. It was actually a geological transect. So people were looking for rocks. And then suddenly on the side, I see something, a shadow, like, oh my God, that looks amazing. Like, please, can we go there? And then we went there. And this animal was probably 2 meters long and 3 meters wide. And the base of the coral was probably more than 10 centimeters diameter. It was an animal tree. And what happened with black corals is that they grow very slow. These animals, they are endangered. You cannot just collect them because this black skeleton that they have, it was in the past wanted because they use that to produce different type of jewelry, not in the Galapagos, but in the world in general. So this, as you can see, the base of that coral will cost millions, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that this animal is probably close to 700 years old.
If this is a deep sea coral, how were people collecting these to make jewelry from them? And who would even have come up with the idea?
Yeah, that's a great question. But most of the black corals that they use for jewelry, they collect them from the shallow waters. You can also find some species of black corals in shallow waters. These black corals, as you can see in the case of these leopates, with all that branching three-dimensionality, will have the same function than a tree in the Amazon. Mm. So there's no bears there, but there's hundreds of crabs in this only lonely tree that you can see there. This black coral had hundreds of those. In this one here, we have an specialist in this type of associates, and he said that he'd never seen that specific species.
Wow. What are some of the depths that you're going to, like in the Galapagos?
In the Galapagos, we went to different depths, but often we stay between the deeper we went was more than 1,000 meters. But we were looking for coral reefs. We were looking for vertical coral reefs because Dr. Kathleen Robert, who is my PhD supervisor, he was very interested in understanding these vertical walls because there is actually no studies on deep sea vertical walls in the Galapagos. There are some studies in shallow vertical walls in the Galapagos, but not in the deep sea. And vertical walls, because they are a hard substrate, they are colonized by different type of sessile organisms such as corals, and so they are important, and we cannot really study them other ways. We need to go there. Mm-hmm. In the past it was with submarines, so human tripulated submarines. Mm-hmm. And now we have these ROVs, but if we use something else, it's very hard to really capture the biodiversity of vertical walls. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in the Galapagos we use ROVs, and for my previous research also. And the pristinity of the Galapagos is very hard to find in the world right now, where most of the biodiverse seas have been exploited. You can think about the deep sea of the Galapagos as looking back to how things might have been in an ocean before all this extraction of resources. Mm-hmm. For me, particularly, extremely important to now study climate change in these areas. Because, as I mentioned, although these are pristine in terms of never being exposed to physical damage, they are not protected for climate change. Although the regulation of the Galapagos are good and they are protected from many other problems, they are still vulnerable to climate change. And so understanding how this ocean warming, and especially the loss of oxygen, which is critical in the tropics, how climate change might affect these pristine seas that we still have in this planet, the few last hotspots and hot spots that we have. Mm-hmm. One thing that I should mention is that the Galapagos, because of its geographical location, although it's in the tropics, it's not really like as warm as you go to the Caribbean and it's super warm. And yeah, you go to a coral reef in the Caribbean, it's mega diverse, but actually the diversity of these areas is not as high as imagine here in the with the Labrador Current in Newfoundland. However, the Galapagos is a particular case because in the Galapagos we have this Humboldt Current that comes from the south to the northwest. Then we have the Panama Current that comes with warm waters to the south. But then we also have the Cromwell Current that comes from the east to the west from the deep sea, also bringing nutrients all up. And so that causes upwelling and a concentration of nutrients. And also the temperature of the water is different. There's areas in the Galapagos where the temperature will be 15 degrees and the areas where it will be 23 degrees. So you can find the penguin and then you have whales and then you have sharks and then you have cormorants. Because of this unique geographic location and the encounter of different currents in the Galapagos with cold water from the deep sea and also few currents with warm waters, that creates an ecosystem where you find fish with origins from the tropics. You have fish with origins from the Indo-Pacific. You have fish from the southern part of Latin America, so from cold waters. What about deep sea coral reefs? We know very little, so it's kind of a whole area to explore. And that's why probably we find, like as I did not mention, we found during the cruise in the Galapagos two never-before-seen coral reefs. One of them, the largest ever found in the deep sea, more than 800 meters length. That's crazy, yeah. We almost forgot to mention about discovering of two coral reefs. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh, there you go. Well, thank you so much, Belen, for joining the podcast today. This was so interesting, and I'm so excited for people to get to look at these images that you found and hear about your research. And I feel like my curiosity is appeased now, so thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
So good. Thank you to Belen for joining us on this week's episode. If you have questions for her about her work in the Galapagos, or if you have suggestions for future episodes, you can send an email to wavecast@mi.mun.ca. We'll see you next time.